But then, it may also be said, neither did Theodore Roosevelt himself wish ever to depart that blessed state any sooner than necessary. The youngest of our presidents, in fact, he remained the youngest in spirit as well. He was exuberantly fond of any number and variety of household pets. He joined in pillow fights, picnics, relished ghost stories in the dark, bedtime stories, stories of any kind. "You must always remember," observed his friend Cecil Spring Rice, the British diplomat, "that the president is about 6. Nothing. Not the experience of war or the death of loved ones. Not the passing of years or the burdens of high office could extinguish, even subdue for long, the ardent vitality and imagination of the child within. Years after leaving the White House, in explanation of an extremely hazardous, ill-advised exploring expedition to Brazil that he took part in, he said simply, 'I had to go. It was my last chance to be a boy again.'" He was the kind of father who, at the dinner table, would serve the youngest child first, or who, when their mother was not looking, would cut the icing off his own cake and slip it to the nearest child. A baby's hand, he thought, was the most beautiful of God's creations. "I love all these children and have great fun with them," he wrote to his sister-in-law in a letter included here, "and I am touched by the way in which they feel I am their special friend, champion, and companion." If separated from them, he wanted them to know they were never out of mind. To be sure they knew his feelings, he poured himself out on paper in some of the most engaging letters ever written by an American father, let alone a president of the United States, busy as he was. Full of news, advice, opinion, always full of affection, the letters can be seen now as child support of another kind from another era. Some he illustrated with his own memorable line drawings, knowing perfectly what pleasure these would give. More often, it is his talent for the vivid word picture that makes what he wrote so exceptional. There is the letter of November 20th, 1906, describing for young Ted what he saw on his famous trip to Panama. "I know of no better eyewitness portrayal of the great tumult of the steam shovels at work in Culebra Cut." A noted latter-day child psychologist, Margaret McFarland, liked to stress that attitudes aren't taught, they're caught. Certainly among the prevailing attitudes to be caught from Theodore Roosevelt's letters to his children is that life is infinitely interesting, and that the more interest we take, the more fun it becomes. He writes of history, health, his horse, his travels, keelboats on the Mississippi, books, art, Africa at night, not to mention the doings of others in the family. The characters in Dickens, he offers, are really to a great degree personified attributes rather than individuals. The mysteries of mental telepathy are no light matter, for after all, there is much in it and in kindred things which are real and which at present we do not understand. There is never doubt of his love for each of the children, his trust in them, his devotion to their mother, or that home is where his heart is. "After all, fond as I am of the White House, there isn't any place in the world like home, like Sagamore Hill, where things are our own with our own associations, and where it is really country." Spanning a dozen years, from 1898 to 1911, the letters come to us from that vanished day when family correspondence was still an established part of family life, and when letters were written not just to be read, but read aloud. They were family talk on paper, and for the voluble Roosevelts, who seldom ever stopped talking, this was particularly so. It's a point for the modern reader to bear in mind for the full enjoyment of the letters.